Of all the objections to Bitcoin, the objection that it wastes electricity is the most absurd. This thinking betrays a fundamental misunderstanding of how electricity works, how markets work, and what waste is. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And we've got a read today. We've got a short read today, actually. And I mentioned this in the guy's take, but this is by Beautyon, and I believe this was posted by him on Noster, if I'm not mistaken. It somehow fell back on my radar sometime recently. And like I said, it's a really short read, but I think it's an important perspective in the Bitcoin energy debate, because it's slightly different. There's been a number of different takes, and the ones that I mentioned in the guy's take to really dig into that I highly, highly recommend are Parker Lewis's Bitcoin Does Not Waste Energy, Bitcoin is a Pioneer Species by Brandon Quittam, and Bitcoin and the Grid, the series, which I believe I only did the first one of, which I cannot remember the author of that off the top of my head. I very, very much apologize. But this one is Bitcoin Doesn't Waste Electricity. And this is more an argument around the idea of waste and what that even means, aside from the efficiency boost, what Bitcoin actually does when it comes to energy consumption, and the massive benefit that it can be for grid stability and intermittent demand services, and making economical services, electricity services like solar and renewables that make no economic sense otherwise, how it can actually transform the economics of those and make them scalable, which are things that we talk about in the guy's take. I kind of get into a rant about a lot of these different things, but I don't want to lead too much because I want Beautyon to kind of take this away with the beginning of the argument, and then we will expand on it afterward. This show is brought to you by CoinKite and the Cold Card hardware wallet and the many different hardware security devices they have. Definitely, definitely check them out. 9% off with code Bitcoin Audible, and then Swan Bitcoin, the Bitcoin onboarding service out there. If you were looking for a way to get Bitcoin or get it into your IRA, they can set you up literally in minutes. Check them out if you haven't, swanbitcoin.com/guy. And then lastly, the Fold Card. It is the debit card that pays you sats for having to use fiat. There is a free version and a premium, and they recently announced that they have a further partnership with Visa and that they are finally going international. So keep an ear out. I'll have you updated whenever that happens. All three can be found in the show notes, and 20,000 sats for free signing up for Fold. So check that out. Link available right there in the description. With that, let's get into today's read. And it's titled, Bitcoin Doesn't Waste Electricity by Beautyon. Of all the objections to Bitcoin, the objection that it wastes electricity is the most absurd. This thinking betrays a fundamental misunderstanding of how electricity works, how markets work, and what waste is. Electricity is a real-time service. It is transmitted by specialist companies through either solar, nuclear, wind, coal, or water generation. When these services produce electricity, the consumers of it draw it in real time and pay for it per kilowatt hour, the unit used to measure quantities of electricity. Electricity is used for many purposes: cooking, entertainment, TV or internet, and now cars run on stored electricity supplied by generating companies. Whatever use you choose to put the electricity you pay for to, if you are satisfied, then the electricity has not been wasted. Furthermore, and this is most important, the electricity you consume could never have been used by anyone else after consumption. It is used once, and then it is gone. Electricity isn't a physical good, like water that is pumped down a pipe to you. It is weightless and not physical at all. Once you draw mains electricity into your devices and it's consumed, it can never be sent back or repurposed. It is a stream that is irreversible. That electricity could only ever have been used by you, and since you pay for it at the agreed rate, how you use it is nobody's business but yours. There is no difference between a consumer choosing to heat their outdoor swimming pool to 90 degrees Fahrenheit in winter with electricity and a Bitcoin miner performing proof-of-work calculations. Waste is subjective with electricity, which is an intangible service, not a physical product. Compare and contrast electricity usage with wasteful packaging. Here are some examples. And here he has a handful of images which are kind of hilarious. The first one is probably the funniest. There's a rather big box with packing material, like dampening material, and then a plastic bag with a big packing slip and a sticker inside of it. And it's just a big, like, takes up a lot of space. And inside the little plastic bag was a 2 millimeter diameter hex nut. So it's just barely sitting on the tip of this person's finger. And that was literally everything in the package. And then there's a box wrapped up with two separate plastic things, avocado halves on a shelf, and then an orange put in a plastic container individually. And then a box, like a pretty big box that you think you'd have like a tablet or maybe a large mobile smartphone in. And it's got a foam cutout and foam dampening, and it's like a really thick cardboard box, and there's like a tiny little just like single unit USB charger in the middle of it. So just to get you an idea, I wanted to describe those before we jump back in. All of these pitiful images are examples of actual waste, because the packaging was objectively unnecessary, and the physical matter of the packaging persists after the job they were used for is done, unlike electricity, which is literally consumed in total. They are all clearly irrational. In each of the above cases, the product could have been safely delivered intact without the elaborate packaging, with less leftover material, or waste. This is very different to electricity because physical resources are consumed that the consumer did not ask for or need. And yes, this really does need to be spelled out because some people think that Bitcoin mining, quote, wastes electricity. Wasteful, adjective, of a person, action, or process using or expending something of value carelessly, extravagantly, or to no purpose. Bitcoin miners do not consume electricity carelessly or extravagantly, and certainly not to no purpose. If you depend on dictionary definitions as your basis for reality, Bitcoin mining does not fit the description of a wasteful activity at all. Note how the example Google provides of the word in use is, quote, wasteful energy consumption. I smell propaganda. As I've explained many times when writing about Bitcoin, it is crucial that people use English correctly when talking about it, otherwise confusion is spread and people get hurt. There's nothing wrong with efficiency as a goal, but it is not correct to categorize other people's consumption of a good or service as right or wrong. As long as they are paying for the service they consume, it is up to them how they consume those services. And of course, electricity is a service, not a good, that produces no waste. You may try to make the argument that the heat produced by Bitcoin mining is wasted energy, but you will fail. No Bitcoin miner wants to have the electricity they consume turned into heat. They want it to be turned into Bitcoin. The heat their rigs produce and dispersing it is a cost of business that they all accept. If a new, more efficient type of integrated circuit that mined without producing a lot of heat came onto the market, rational miners would switch to it for the power savings and increased profits. The market encourages participants to strive for efficiency. Bitcoin miners are not stupid. Oh wait, Bitcoin Unlimited. The next time someone tells you that Bitcoin mining wastes electricity, you can now explain to them why this is not so. There is no, quote, better use that electricity could have been put to. Electricity doesn't work like that. And don't be too harsh on them either. Many people don't know how electricity works. If you like the content and feel so obliged to send some love via BTC donations, you can do so at the address below. And there's a little note. It says, people keep commenting that electrons are not actually weightless. If you're planning to make this comment, especially citing the actual mass of an electron of 0.00054859 AMU, or 9.1 times 10 to the negative 31 kilograms, well done. You're paying close attention when you read. Everyone should read carefully with their guard up.
That was funny. That somebody's comment's like, well,
actually, electrons weigh 10 to the negative 31 kilograms, or approximately 1/2000th of an atomic mass unit.
Honestly, it seems like something I would send him.
This show is brought to you by CoinKite and the Cold Card hardware wallet. The Cold Card Mark IV is a Bitcoin-only, easy-to-use, ultra-secure Bitcoin hardware wallet. When people say, not your keys, not your coins, this is what they're talking about. You need to own your keys. You need to know that you have them securely generated on a device that is separated from the internet, like the Cold Card, or the Cold Card Q1, which is their new device that you can pre-order now. I'm pretty stoked about it. I have two Mark IVs, and I'm definitely getting a Q1. I mean, you don't need like 800 hardware wallets like me. I'm just kind of crazy like that. But you might like it. I mean, I love tinkering with all the new things, and CoinKite has just a plethora of great devices and security devices, as well as just cool things to check out. You've got a 9% discount, by the way, with code BitcoinAudible. So definitely check it out. The link will be right in the show notes. My favorite thing both about the Cold Card Mark IV and the Tap Signers is the NFC support. I am kind of a nerd when it comes to that. It's just so much fun to just be able to tap it to my phone and sign. I use it with the Nunchuck wallet. If you have not checked this out, I definitely would. It's a really fun, really simple setup. And the beauty of having, it's great because I can have my Cold Card Mark IV be essentially like a backup key, like my hardcore cold storage key that I keep at home. And then my Tap Signer, which I keep in my wallet, is my only, it's literally just a card. It is a card with a tiny little chip in it that has got the absolute bare minimum necessary to run a hardware, to have a hardware wallet. And it's really, really cool to sign a transaction. And you just tap it up to the phone. It's really neat. Did I say it was neat? Because I should say that again. It's neat. Check it out. Don't forget the discount code. Bitcoin Audible gets you 9%. And the link is right there in the show notes. If you want to keep your Bitcoin safe, there's no better place. Now, let's jump back into the show.
I'm always a fan of Beautyon. Beautyon is a character, especially on social media. But usually, one of the people that I follow and really appreciate because of their contrarian takes. Beautyon always has a very interesting perspective on things. And this is actually a really old article, as I mentioned, from 2017. But I just think it's always good to bring this back. And there's a couple of base elements to, or base things to understand when we're talking about quote unquote wasting energy. And what's fascinating is that when you actually think about energy that could not get used, like genuine waste electricity, electricity that is generated and basically just grounded out, just shoved into the ground, because there is no one to consume it. Understand that when you're generating electricity, the electricity that is demanded has to be generated on the fly. Like, as he says, it is a service. Like, there's no buffer. There's no delay. It's not like they can generate it and hold on to it for a few minutes before you need it. Like, they are generating into the grid at the very moment that you are consuming the energy. And they have to account for the fact that what ends up happening is frequencies of the electricity increase or decrease based on the load. And if it gets too low or it gets too high, you get a blackout. And
basically the network has to manage this. It has to constantly shift how much electricity is being generated or how much electricity is being ported into the grid versus somewhere else, or just being, you know, grounded out into the dirt. Because a lot of times they don't have, that's why you have to have demand response, like gas generators and natural gas and coal as backup plans for, and this is what happened in Texas, is they got rid of their on-demand generation and have been pushing for all of the solar and wind and, you know, renewable stuff, which is the most wasteful form of electricity production, bar none, like exponentially worse, because you can't control at all when you generate it. In fact, the generation of wind and solar energy peaks at the lowest points of demand. It's like noon in the middle of the day. Most people aren't, like, peak energy consumption is like 5 to 9 o'clock at night when everybody gets home and they're chilling, they're cooking, they're, you know, they got their AC knocked down, they're watching TV, they got all the electric, they're using everything in their household. Not only does that not line up with the output that solar, the electricity that solar actually produces, it's when solar is in the process of plummeting. And understand, so many people just, like, you know, in the most naive sense, just say, but what about batteries? The amount of energy, the amount of electricity we consume is not even slightly feasible to be stored in batteries. And the extraordinary cost, solar is already far more costly when you account for its production process, the amount of land and environment that you have to destroy. Like, a single oil rig has an incredibly small footprint. It does almost no damage to the environment, and it can pump for an extremely long time, very dense, highly mobile energy, a highly mobile energy source that all it needs to do is be refined, and then you can use it immediately. Solar has an incredibly extensive process that involves huge, like, lithium and cobalt mines and all of these rare earth materials that are involved in so many different steps of the process, that it's such a low energy density that you have to clear out extraordinary amounts of land, and you have to eviscerate environments and just cover them with solar panels to get even slightly comparable amount of energy cost. And it's why that even the most forgiving analyses and reports basically lay out that at somewhere between 10 to 15% of solar being part of the electricity grid, it just becomes entirely uneconomical. Like, there's, you can't have any additional marginal useful output of electricity. Like, it just maxes. And that's why the countries and the grids that have aggressively gone solar, understand, solar has its place. It's wonderful in a certain context, but it doesn't work at scale. Because something works in a small context or works on a roof of a house that's already just wasted space and can be used to supplement and have your own energy source. Like, I would like to have solar here at this house. I think it's a great way to decentralize and remove reliance on the grid. And in that same context, storing battery power in a small, like, purely supplemental sense is also not nearly the task as something like the grid. But the amount of waste, solar is the perfect example of something that is great in one area and for one purpose and is absolutely garbage at scale. It is one of the worst, most environmentally destructive forms of energy we have, specifically because of how not dense it is. And how many different, have you ever seen a picture of a lithium mine or, like, some of these rare earth mineral mines? We're talking about basically digging a small canyon, just these vast, vast mines to get tiny amounts of this substance. And then you're starting to, then you want to talk about batteries? And worst of all, batteries through the grid, which loses massive amounts of electricity just in its structure. There's like a third of all energy is just lost passively. It's just lost in the transmission across the lines because of how distant the energy source is. In fact, the most efficient and most beneficial thing we could do for electricity generation is do it locally, is to have every home generate its own electricity. And in this sense, don't think that I'm crapping on solar. In the same way that I'm not crapping on, I'm not saying that hammers are stupid or that we shouldn't use hammers. If I see someone trying to screw in a screw with a hammer, it's simply not the tool for the job, and that's how you waste a hammer. But the funny thing about that problem with energy generation is how much electricity actually is wasted when it comes to renewable power sources or renewable generation sources, because we have zero control over when they were generated. I already lost my train of thought. Going back to batteries, I don't remember the actual statistic, and I wish I did because it's really powerful. But there was somebody made an estimation and pulled together how much lithium was even accessible on the planet and compared it to the lithium ion batteries that we have today. And if we used nothing for cell phones and we did nothing but make batteries for the grid, that we would not have enough. It's not physically possible to create enough battery power just to manage a battery storage of the electricity that the United States uses in a very short period of time. Like I said, I can't remember the actual statistic, and I'm not able to find it in a very cursory search, but it really, really, really puts that whole problem into perspective. And then, like, people will literally say, it's like, well, there's going to be, you know, some major innovation in batteries. It's like, okay, well, then the absolute last possible thing that we want is staggering amounts of investment in old technology if we genuinely think we're on the cusp of a breakthrough that actually makes it all economical. Like, if we're being honest, if that's genuinely what we think, the last thing we want is to be spending a crap ton of money making lithium ion batteries if we're about to have a breakthrough in a completely new technology. You can think about it like infrastructure matters, and it is insanely wasteful. It is extraordinarily wasteful to build infrastructure for old technology when it makes more sense to be moving to a new technology, or that there is going to be one in supposedly short order, which I think that's a kind of pie in the sky. Like, oh, it's a fantasy that we're going to make all these investments and do all these things now because one day, randomly, a black swan event is going to happen that we cannot predict and that there is absolutely no way to know is the case. I mean, you could have just as easily said, oh, it's time to start building out and preparing for cold fusion. We could have wasted hundreds of billions of dollars on it in the late 80s or early 90s. Where would we be today? This is literally why central planning doesn't work, because it presupposes knowledge of things that you cannot possibly know. But going back to the idea that it's insanely wasteful to be even moving in that direction before any of the technology actually makes economic sense, is it's like what happened in the 90s that really, really caused huge degrading put the United States internet architecture, the internet infrastructure, behind much of the rest of the Western world, or I guess the modern world, not necessarily even the West. But the reason is because in the 90s, they went, I think it was like $700 billion? No, I'm probably, that amount of money was insane back then. It must have been like $1 billion. It must have been like $900 million or something like that. I can't remember. But there was a huge push for the government to give broadband to everyone. And it was funny because I noticed the consequences of this when I was growing up, but I didn't know what caused it. It didn't register. Like, I had obviously no knowledge that any of this was even going on. But the government went on this effort, this push, and massive subsidization to expand broadband internet. And it was literally shortly before most internet traffic started to dump into cell phone networks that weren't really a thing yet. They were, you know, an innovation right on the horizon. And we were about to move to fiber networks. And they heavily, heavily overinvested, way past what the market would have done, specifically because the market wasn't doing it, into broadband, into cable connection, which has far higher upkeep costs and has noise, which means that there are limitations. And as somebody who is a cable technician, like, there are a lot of problems with the fact that you're using RF signal in a copper line, that if there is any sort of opening anywhere, it ruins the internet for everybody in the neighborhood. And most of the time, it just shows up as noise that ends up dropping some packets every once in a while and causing delays in connection. And it just ends up having like a generally bad experience. And a lot of times it just sits there and most people can't, it's hard to pinpoint, and it just keeps causing problems, especially if you're at like the end of a run rather than near towards the center and towards the, you know, an amplifier or a hub. But anyway, the subsidization in the 90s ended up causing a massive overinvestment in this cable infrastructure just before a far, far better technology became economical. And because of that, we didn't adopt that technology. We had already put down all the lines where it would have made sense to have fiber lines. We were very, very slow on the uptake. Even today, the internet connections that you get in a lot of the United States is way worse because of the federal government trying to subsidize and quote-unquote invest in the technology. The technology stagnated. It did the exact opposite because we blew resources that we shouldn't have on an already, within weeks, exaggeration, but within just a few years, completely outdated technology. And it wasn't what we should have been saving the resources for when fiber came along. And we actually knew it was going to come. We had fiber. It was just, we were iterating through the types, the different materials and ways that we can create fiber that wasn't so fragile as the original glass fiber that we actually had to use. And eventually they made like a composite plastic material, and now it can bend and it's super thin and super easy, and it has an extraordinarily fast, extraordinarily low latency, extraordinarily dense connection. And this is just kind of one example of something that has happened throughout the industry. But talking about what I saw when I was younger, is what actually ended up happening is, rather than having good investment and infrastructure build out with all of that capital, there was a lot of investment in cable companies, in new cable infrastructure. But what ended up happening is it kind of created this housing bubble sort of thing in the internet ISP market. Is what you had is you had a bunch of small ISPs running around and laying out infrastructure and then selling back to the conglomerates. And basically what happened, just the way all government subsidy goes, is they just pick a bunch of huge corporations and throw gargantuan amounts of money at them and say, you're now in a government project and we want you to bring internet to people. And what did they do? Did they actually update the infrastructure, and did they actually update the lines and, you know, expand the internet? Not nearly like was intended, obviously, like it was intended. What actually happened, the bulk of where that capital went was just buying up small ISPs, was just consolidating the industry. They were just buying up competitors. So when we were younger, we would have Fred's Cable and literally Bob's Cable, like every a local hub and source of cable and internet and television was a separate entity. Like, it was its own company. And this was extremely widespread. You had tons of variety in the market. And then over about 9 to 12 years, it turned into like four giant conglomerates that bought all those small players up. Because what did they use with the capital? They just used it for market dominance. And they had to, because somebody else was going to. Like, if they didn't, it was going to be AT&T. If Time Warner didn't, it was just going to be their competitor. But far and wide, particularly in a network technology like that, something where you're laying out grid that you then have control over, updating old infrastructure is way, way less profitable than just expanding your dominance over the network, which means it just became a race. They had to do it as quickly as possible. Just another huge example of why central planning and investment for the sake of investment and just subjectively saying, oh, we should have more of this in the economy, completely fails to recognize the actual value of those services, which is what the market does, is trying to determine whether or not it makes sense from the context of the consumer. Are they willing to spend for this, or is it more important that we dedicate more resources to healthcare? We have scarce resources. We have to allocate them efficiently. And it makes no sense at all to heavily invest in a poor technology, particularly a technology that is not used in the proper way. And going all the way back to wasteful electricity, the beauty of Bitcoin is that it actually makes things, poor energy sources, low density energy sources, like solar and wind, and more specifically, highly unreliable intermittent energy sources that have to pump a lot of energy just back into the ground because there's nothing to do with it. There's no consumer, and there's certainly not the cost benefit of buying extremely expensive batteries that have short lifespans and storing up tons of this energy to try to sell it to a consumer at a price that they can't possibly afford, because your overhead is now way, way worse. Bitcoin actually can use that energy. In fact, Bitcoin miners are more than anything wanting to get exactly that kind of energy. Wasted electricity is Bitcoin's prime target because it's got a net price of $0 per kilowatt hour. Which means that if they can offer one penny, if they can offer two pennies, suddenly this solar farm that isn't profitable and is constantly producing energy or constantly producing electricity when nobody needs it and having to pump it into the ground and isn't making any money and makes the investors go, why did we do this? I'm never going to invest in solar again. Now suddenly they have a buyer all day long. A Bitcoin miner can come set up shop in a matter of days and use up all of the excess energy, all the wasted electricity that the solar plant produces. Bitcoin is actually crucial to scaling up the ability for solar to be a reliable or useful electricity source. And the exact same goes for wind energy. It's essentially an economic, it behaves like an economic battery, and it's actually a technology that can provide that economic benefit. You think about it, it's actually really, really fascinating to think what Bitcoin is doing, because Bitcoin mining, going back to hashes and proof of work, if you think it's basics episode 3, I don't know, one of the basics episode. But going back, if you realize what Bitcoin does, what Bitcoin proof of work does, is it gives integrity to the history of the Bitcoin chain. It is your assurance that the history is unchangeable. It's the force field around editing Bitcoin, which is funny because when you're economically transporting the energy, using it to mine Bitcoin, using the wasted solar energy and the wasted wind energy and the many, many renewables that produce energy intermittently at entirely unreliable amounts and at entirely unreliable times, Bitcoin miners being able to use all of that wasted energy is actually transporting the integrity of the transactions and the settlement of transactions from the time that the energy is cheapest to the time that most transaction and settlement activity is needed for the network. It's literally able to take that and turn it into digital integrity to harden or to make the history of Bitcoin immutable so that we can efficiently trade and allocate our resources to better energy production, to better energy consumption, to more efficient technologies and innovations. Because if you don't have a good money that's able to even translate the value of these goods and services, all of it gets misallocated anyway. The waste, the staggering amounts of waste and destruction and economic and environmental harm that occurs in our economy is far and away caused by the staggering amounts of misallocation and the excessive supporting of bigness for the sake of bigness, the The fact that creditworthiness is the access to future resources rather than actual today productivity. So it ends up fueling corporations that can be massive at a scale that makes no sense whatsoever and is never sustainable in an actual free market with an actual sound monetary unit. Fiat is a huge subsidy to this toxic bigness of everything and this monopolization and centralizing force throughout the economy, which creates huge amounts of waste, which makes our ability to react and adapt to individual environments and individual situations, it puts a barrier, it puts resistance to being able to do that because you're not able to translate information properly through the economy. That is by far the biggest problem when it comes to environmental harm, wasted resources, and wasted electricity. And that is not consumed electricity, as Budion says very well in this article. Consumed electricity is the exact opposite of wasted electricity. Wasted electricity is stuff that is produced that cannot get consumed. And another great one is methane flaring. It is completely uneconomical. You have to flare off the methane when you're mining for oil and, you know, multiple other resources sometimes. But there is no economic benefit to harnessing it because the cost of trying to get anything out of it is more than you would actually get out of it. The single exception to that, that is a literal game changer, is the fact that you can plug in a generator right on the flare and you can mine Bitcoin with it. Something that would be completely wasted and is like 13x or something like that, the greenhouse gas as carbon dioxide is. So even if that's your goal, Bitcoin mining is the number one thing for lowering greenhouse gas emissions. Because it can literally cap and more efficiently burn off every single methane flare on the planet. Because again, it is net $0. It is costless energy. And there is nothing that can have a more intermittent, we have no other source of intermittent demand, mobile demand, and geographically independent demand, meaning it doesn't have to be near a building or a consumer or a city. It can go anywhere in the world and you can plug a miner in. If you can produce energy, the miner can use it right there. All it needs is an internet connection. And that essentially means anywhere on the planet. Bitcoin does not waste energy. Bitcoin is the best tool we have to find and utilize wasted electricity. And even better is to utilize it for the most important purpose we possibly could come up with, to secure a sound digital monetary system that is independent of the state, which will then have a feedback loop of creating even less waste, being more efficient, and more accurately allocating capital to its actual high-value use, and not supporting the toxic bigness of fiat money. So not only is it direct consumption of electricity a huge force for getting rid of waste and being as efficient as possible, but what it does in securing the money is an even larger means of clearing up waste and becoming more efficient in allocating resources properly and not destroying the environment. Sometimes it's really incredible how much political and environmentalist activists generally have such a naive perspective of things and end up using government, and they're so focused on government power rather than actual environmentalism, rather than actually learning the truth, but that they're there to support a narrative and they're doing it for the good of everyone, which means they do it with a clean conscience, which is the most dangerous possible way to use that power or to have power, is to think that you should control people and you should tell them how and when they can use energy, and you should control the one resource that is most closely tied to our standard of living and the prosperity of the people. And you can do it with a clean conscience and do absolutely staggering amounts of destruction and harm to those people. And even worse, harming the actual environment, the actual cause in their effort to fix and help the environment, they are destroying the one thing that could help practically more than anything else that is new in the space and has the potential for massive expansion and efficiency gains all across the world. It is literally a tragedy. But anyway, that's what I wanted to talk about today. It was I don't know when this came across. I think Beautyon posted it on Noster. And I just saw it, and then I searched through my database of all the reads I've done and the episodes and couldn't find it. And I was like, oh, well, that's a short, quick, easy one. And it's something we haven't talked about in a while. And I know we got a lot of new listeners. And if you haven't heard that argument, you haven't broken down. Another great one is Bitcoin Doesn't Waste Energy by Parker Lewis, which is a slightly different take, a different way to think about it. And more on the incredible value that Bitcoin's energy consumption actually is and why it consumes energy, which I think is just kind of icing on the cake. It's kind of like a, you know, the argument that it consumes wasted energy, which is 100% true. And in fact, the crazy thing about the idea that Bitcoin energy is wasteful or bad for the environment is that it is literally, when you look at the energy makeup, Bitcoin mining, the Bitcoin mining industry uses more renewable energy than any other that exists. Like it's the quote unquote, by the judgment of the narrative, it is the cleanest industry possible. Like, they are in first place by a huge margin, and they are specifically using energy that nobody else can take advantage of. And it's like, they're just mad that, or they're just completely ignorant of this somehow, which just tells me that they're not even slightly serious about helping the environment or to even support the things that support their narrative in a non-naive sense. That if it's just not, it literally makes me, like, it's so hard not to think that it is just an anti-human religion. It's just a, if anything is better, I hate it. I don't know, that's the feeling that I get from it more and more. Alex Epstein, Epstein makes a really, really good argument in, is it The Moral Case for Fossil Fuels or Fossil Future? I don't remember. I think it's The Moral Case for Fossil Fuels, where he really spends a lot more time breaking down, and there's some really great statistics and like hard data in those books as well. I highly recommend those if you want to get like a really sobering view of what's going on with, you know, government control and subsidization of energy and how it is so incredibly distorting things and in a very negative way for the environment, no less. And also, he does it in an extremely well-reasoned and not like aggressive or accusatory voice. I mean, he's just laying out the facts. But he has a really good, and I'm pretty sure it's The Moral Case for Fossil Fuels, he has a really good breakdown of the ideology of quote unquote the narrative, and the climate narrative, and where things get essentially tied to the idea that make no sense at all, like the whole apocalypse sort of thing, which has genuinely no scientific basis whatsoever, and then any discussion at all of CO2 and greenhouse gases or whatever is immediately attached to this like four times logical leap to the world's about to burst into flames in like 5 years, which I specifically remember back in like 2011 or 2012 that we had 12 years and it was just over. Like, we were all going to be dead. Odd how that timeline just keeps getting pushed back. But anyway, really good article, short and sweet. And, it's such a fascinating topic because I learned more about how the energy grid works and energy production and different types of energy production. And, you know, in fact, actually a really good one on that, if you want to dig further into that, which I don't think I ever went back and did the second one of those, but it's Bitcoin and the Grid. And it is such a phenomenal piece because of just how dense it is from the context of just information and knowledge on how energy production works, how it has to be transported to the user, and what is economical, and what why there are huge problems with investment in certain areas and for certain things, and where subsidies calls for. I mean, he just it's a whole series, and I think I only read the first one, actually. I think that there were three pieces, if I'm not mistaken. But they are really dense, but they're phenomenal. Really good for exactly that information on this topic. So if you want to take a deep dive, that's definitely one to check out. I'll try to remember to put that in the show notes as well. But I always just loved this about Bitcoin, is that it touches so many things, and it's such a fundamental technology, because it is literally base. It's the base layer. It's layer one of society, is the monetary base. And because of that, it has huge implications in basically in everything. It touches everything, which is exactly why you can do 718 reads on God knows how many different topics and from how many different angles. And, you know, like that's I feel like that's all I do, is I figure out, I go through and I'm reading about all of these different things about how like fundamental, like huge infrastructure and things work. I mean, granted, you know, when you're just doing basic reading, you're getting kind of a high level view of a lot of these things, but extremely useful high level view to get an understanding of how these things work, because Bitcoin, it affects them all. And one of my favorite things about Bitcoin is just, it just touches so many things. So there are so many different ways or different disciplines and schools of thought that you can explore that end up being very related to Bitcoin, even though they don't seem like they necessarily would. And one of the things that is so fascinating to me is Bitcoin and energy. Like, I genuinely think Bitcoin is going to lead to an energy revolution and be a huge incentive for energy development that never would have been economically viable before. And, a great one on this. Oh my God, I can't believe I didn't think about this one. Is Brandon Quittam's Bitcoin is a Pioneer Species. This one is so good for kind of a mental model, a framing for how to understand what Bitcoin is doing when it comes to energy innovation, energy expansion, and the finding and settling of energy sources. And that Bitcoin mining is a fundamental game changer. It is a unique technology among all other energy consumers. And that's such a fun one. That's such a fun one. If you haven't heard Bitcoin is a Pioneer Species, I will also have the link to that one in the show notes. I've now got like 10 links that I got to remember, and I'm probably going to end up with 3 because I'll forget. So let me go ahead and close it out so I don't forget. Thank you guys so much. Thanks to Beautyon always for the really fun writing or really fun reading. Link to the piece in the show notes for a couple of other links to things that he mentioned in the read, as well as so you could see, just get a kick out of the packaging images that he shows. And of course, there's tons of other great writing by Beautyon. If you just search Bitcoin Audible Beautyon on Spotify or Fountain or whatever, you'll find probably 5 or 6 episodes at least. So I will catch you guys on the next one. A huge thank you to our sponsors, to Swan Bitcoin, for the best Bitcoin onboarding and amazing video and stuff. Like, the Hard Money Show is a really, really handy show for, I mean, just a great way to keep up to date on it. I found myself just kind of watching it in the background to stay up to date on things. They've been doing some really amazing things over at Swan Studio, so I got to give a shout out to that. And then Fold and the Fold Card, which I got 2% back. Rad got me 2% back on one of my purchases this morning, and that just feels good to get 2% back, to get paid in Bitcoin for having to use fiat. Just magical. And then lastly, the Cold Card for keeping my Bitcoin safe. I sleep like a baby at night because I know I hold my keys. 9% discount with code BitcoinAudible, and I'll catch you guys on the next one. This is Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan. And until next time, everybody, take it easy, guys. There's no room for facts when our minds are occupied by fear. Hans Rosling, from his book Factfulness.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.